Welcome to Money Mastery with your host, Amanda Mangum from Aspire Money Management. Achieving financial confidence means understanding how to navigate market changes, plan for retirement, and make smart money decisions. Money Mastery is here to guide you with strategies, insights, and tools designed to help you pursue your financial goals. Now let's get started with Money Mastery with your host, Amanda.
Hello and welcome to Money Mastery. My name is Amanda Mangum from Aspire Money Management. If you'd like more information about what you hear during our show today, give us a call at 919-342-7715 or visit us online at www.aspiremoneymanagement.net. And while at my website, click on the radio page to check out our past shows or to subscribe to our program on either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon Music. Well, today we'll be talking about behaviors that could quietly undermine everything you've worked so hard to build, some of which catch people off guard once they actually get into retirement. So today we're going to walk through seven investment behaviors that, according to that recent article from Kiplinger, tend to hurt retirees the most. And what makes this conversation worth having is that these aren't obstacles, technically mistakes. There's patterns that can feel completely reasonable in the moment that could add up to real costs over time. So throughout the episode, we'll be drawing from that same Kiplinger article titled, "These Seven Investment Behaviors Hurt Retirees the Most, But It's Not Too Late to Change Your Ways." And once again, I'm glad to have my co-host Jacqueline here with me today.
Well, thank you, Amanda. It's great to be here. And truly, I am looking forward to this one. You know, I think a lot of people assume that the hardest part is just saving for retirement, which I can agree with. But it sounds like what you do or what you do once you get to retirement carries its own set of challenges.
It really does. And one of those things that makes the stage different is that that margin for error is smaller. So during your working years, if you make a financial mistake, it only takes time to recover and income to recover. So in retirement, that cushion actually shrinks. And that's really why behavior matters here so much. So according to research from Morningstar that cites in this article, behavior mistakes can cost investors an average of 1.2% annually. That might sound dramatic, but over a long retirement, that drag adds up. So the encouraging part of this news article is that some of these mistakes are behavioral, so which means that they can be addressed. So let's work through them. The first behavior is holding too much cash out of fear.
Well, and this one surprises me a little bit, but I understand. I mean, cash feels safer. So what's the problem?
That's exactly the institution. It's understandable. So after decades of being told to save and protect what you've built, having cash on hand feels like you're doing the right thing. And to be clear, keeping an emergency reserve is prudent. That's not the issue here. So the issue is when fear pushes a large share of your portfolio into cash for years at a time, because what's potentially happening in the background is that inflation is slowly eroding what the cash can buy. And after taxes, a lot of that cash yields can struggle to keep up pace with inflation. So what feels like protection could actually be a slow, quiet loss. So the approach that could work a little bit better here is defining a clear purpose for your cash. So that Kiplinger notes that many financial services professionals suggest holding 1 to 2 years of planned spending in cash or short-term bonds when investing the remainder with long-term goals in mind. So the key idea here is that when cash is tied to a more specific time horizon, it could be what you actually want it to do, which is reduce anxiety rather than amplify it. So cash without a defined purpose has a way of growing larger and larger until it's doing more harm than good.
Well, and Amanda, that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's the difference between truly a strategy and just a feeling.
And I couldn't agree with you more. And that distinction runs through almost every behavior on this list. So the second one is timing the market instead of staying invested.
Ooh, and Amanda, this one comes up a lot, especially when the markets get rocky.
So all the time. So selling after a decline could feel potentially good in the moment, but it could feel like you're doing something smart. But in practice, it's often locks in loss and increases the potential of missing that rebound. So that's in this research from Hartford Fund cite that in this article that found missing the 10 best days in the market could reduce returns by more than half. 10 days. So out of years and years of investing, that's how significant the cost of market timing could actually be. So if you generally want to reduce risk, adjusting your allocations deliberately can serve you much better than jumping in and out based on what's the news cycle is. And let me add an important note here that volatility is not the same thing as potential loss. They can feel identical in the moment, but they're very different things. So retirement planning is largely about avoiding the combination of the portfolio decline and forced selling at the same time. So those two things are what can actually create damage. And a decline you ride through can be very different from a decline you lock in.
Great point. And that means it's less about what the market does and more about what you do in response to it. I mean, the market's going to fluctuate.
That's a great way to put it. So your behavior during volatility matters immensely. And we'll come to that idea when we get back to behavior number 6. But first, number 3, ignoring tax efficiency in withdrawals.
Well, it feels like one that might, people might not think about until sadly, Amanda, it's too late.
It is, and it's a part of what makes it very costly. So not all retirement dollars are taxed in the same way. So money in taxable brokerage accounts, traditional IRAs, or Roth IRAs behave differently when you take it out. And in order of which you draw those accounts could draw have a significant impact of what you actually keep after taxes. So a general approach that works well for some retirees is that start with taxable assets, then coordinate tax-deferred withdrawals and try to preserve Roth flexibility for later years when possible. So that kind of sequence could actually help reduce lifetime taxes over a long retirement period. But the right approach is personal. There's no single answer here that works for everybody because everyone's income mix, account balances, and family situations are very different. So what approach actually matters is having a plan in place before required minimum distributions kick in and before Medicare premium surcharges start complexing the picture. So waiting until those things actually arrive to think about tax strategy could leave fewer options on the table.
Well, Amanda, when you say RMDs and Medicare premiums can complicate things, what do you mean exactly?
So this is a great question. So the article actually explains that required minimum distributions are withdrawals the IRS requires you to take from tax-deferred accounts once you reach a certain age. So they're mandatory and they count as taxable income. So if you haven't thought ahead, those distributions could push you into a higher tax bracket. And because Medicare Part B and Part D premiums are all income-based, higher income in retirement could actually mean higher premiums as well. So according that planning that you do now and don't do in your early retirement years could actually have a ripple effect a decade down the road.
All right, Amanda. So that's number 3. What's number 4 on the list?
So chasing yield without understanding the risk. And that's one that could be especially tempting when interest rates are low or market feels uncertain. So a high distribution rate looks appealing. It looks stable, but yield is not a free lunch here. So in terms of fixed income, prioritizing yield without understanding what's underneath could mean taking on credit risk, interest rate risk, or concentrating risk that doesn't relieve itself until things go wrong. And investing, things tend to go wrong at the worst possible times. So a more durable lens in return risk is income matters, and it does so in stability of principal and the tax treatment of what you actually receive. The article helpfully points out that if a holding described as high income could drop 20% in a bad year, that income may not be safer net as it appears to be. So the goal is reliable funding over the long run, not just a high distribution rate in the short run. These two things are not always the same.
Well, it sounds like the headline number can mask what's actually going on underneath it, Amanda.
I think you nailed it. And it's a good reminder that investing, when something looks significantly better than everything else, there could be a reason for it. So the question is whether you understand that reason and whether you're comfortable with that potential trade-off if it presents itself. So before we keep going, let me just give out my contact information. Give us a call at 919-342-7715 or visit us online at www.aspiremoneymanagement.net. Scheduling consultation is easy and we're always happy to work around your schedule.
Thank you, Amanda. All right, so we've talked about a lot and there's so much to look forward to here. So what is behavior number 5 on the list?
So failing to rebalance consistently. So that one is quieter than all the rest that we've been talking about. It may not feel like a decision, which is a part of what makes it look easy to overlook. But without rebalancing, risk differs in many ways that may be immediately observed. So some bull markets, portfolios that could become stock heavier than what you intended. After downturns, some people find themselves more conservative than what they actually planned for. So either way, what you thought you had in terms of risk exposure may not no longer match what you actually have. So research from Vanguard cited that in this article that systematically rebalancing could help maintain intended risk levels and improve outcome over time. And it doesn't have to be complex here. So some retirees rebalance annually or whenever allocations drift past a predetermined threshold point. Some of these thresholds are actually set as reminders and make it routine rather than reactive. So there's also practical connection to withdrawal strategies here. If you're regularly pulling out money out of that portfolio for living expenses, those withdrawals could be used to rebalance in a tax-aware way. So for example, drawing from an overweighted area to fund spending potentially reduces the need for separating rebalancing trades. It's a way of accomplishing two things at once.
So Amanda, in the end, rebalancing and withdrawals don't have to be separate decisions. I mean, they could potentially work together.
They actually could. And in that kind of coordination, it could work through a plan where all the pieces talk to each other rather than managing each piece in isolation. So behavior number 6 is overreacting in short-term news. And this circles back to what we've talked about earlier with market timing.
Well, and this one feels very human. You know, it's hard not to pay attention to what's happening in the markets.
It's completely human. And that article acknowledges that directly. So retirees who monitor their portfolios daily could feel more stress and make more reactive decisions. And that's not surprising. So when you're watching something move, the instinct is to respond to it. So an approach that could actually be more practical here is to establish a consistent review schedule. So something like quarterly or semi-annual check-ins, and pair that with a written plan that actually spells out what you're doing during those periods of volatility. So that article actually specifies, meaning having a written investment policy statement as a tool that could provide that structure. So if it gives you something to return to when emotions are actually running high, a set of decisions you made when you were actually calm that could guide you when you're not. The goal is to make decisions when you're clearly headed. So if you find yourself wanting to do something because markets are down, that's generally a sign to return to that plan first and ask whether anything has fundamentally changed. So most of the time it hasn't. Most of the time the answer is to stay the course.
Well, Amanda, there's value in having a document that you created during a calm moment that you can refer back to when things do feel uncertain.
That's a great way to actually frame it. And it's almost like a letter to your future self that spells out what I believe, here's what I've decided, here's what I'll do and what I won't do. So having that in writing potentially takes a lot of pressure off that moment. And that leads to number 7, which is neglecting to adjust strategy over time.
Oh, and this one seems like it could sneak up on people. You know, Amanda, your situation changes, but sadly, your portfolio doesn't.
So that's exactly what can happen. So that portfolio that made sense at 65 may not be the right fit at 75 or 85. Time horizon change, spending needs can change, health can change, and the allocation that was appropriate at one stage of retirement may carry too much or too little risk at later on in these stages. So there are general rule of thumb here. So the article mentions one called the 100 minus your age rule, which gives you a rough idea of how much in hold you should hold in stocks versus more conservative investments. So rules like that are blunt, and the article acknowledges as much, but the underlying idea is useful. So revisiting your allocations periodically and adjusting them based on what your actual cash flow needs look like right now, not what made sense 5 or 10 years ago. So it could actually help to revisit what different parts of that portfolio are actually meant to do. So some assets are for spending, some are for legacy, and some are meant to serve as a buffer against the potential of a very long life. Those rules can shift as time goes on, and that allocation should be able to shift with them. What that actually looks like is in practice is a periodic review, maybe annually, where you sit down and ask some honest questions. Has my spending changed? Has my health changed? Do I have more or less time horizon rather than I thought a few years ago? Or are the goals when I first retired still the same goals? Retirement isn't a fixed destination. It's a moving one, and that plane should move with it.
Absolutely. And it sounds like retirement is not a set it and forget it situation, you know, unlike maybe some other parts of your automated lives.
So not at all. And that's one thing that most of these things that we're talking about here today, people spend decades focusing on accumulation, on building the nest egg, but managing that nest egg through retirement could require ongoing attention and a willingness to adjust as life actually changes. And here's where I want to bring all this together, because all seven of these behaviors share a common thread.
Oh, do they? Amanda, what's that?
So having a plan and staying committed to it, and also having someone in your corner that can help you do both of these, because the research behind these articles makes it very clear that the biggest risks retirees face can often become behavioral. And they're not about picking the wrong stock or missing a market trend. They could be about holding too much cash because it feels safer, or selling when fear takes over, or not rebalancing because it never felt urgent, or not adjusting as life actually changed. Each of these behaviors on its own can actually seem manageable. But when they compound, and in retirement, when there's less time and less income to actually recover from mistakes, compounding errors matter even more so.
Yeah. And this is where working with a financial services professional could really change the equation.
So it could, because in my opinion, an experienced financial services professional isn't just helping you pick investments. They could help you stay the course when your instincts are telling you to do something else. So they could actually be checking in with you periodically to make sure your allocations still reflect where you actually are in life, not where you were when you first actually retired. The kind of ongoing relationship could be worth a great deal here, not just in terms of outcome. Through the research suggested that we could be meaningful, but in terms of sight of security, knowing that someone is actually watching that bigger picture alongside of you. When you're not navigating this alone, potential changes how you experience that retirement altogether.
Well, and Amanda, that matters just as much as the numbers here.
You hit the bullseye with that comment. So finally, the article closes with a simple framework that I think is actually worth sharing here. So set a cash reserve that matches real spending needs. So commit to an allocation that you could live with during a downturn. Build a withdrawal plan that actually considers taxes. So rebalancing on that schedule and review your portfolio less than often when your emotions may want you to. That last one hits harder than it actually sounds, but it can be very important. And if you're doing this, just one thing, I'd suggest writing down the plan while markets are calm, and then use it as your decisions filter when you're not. It's a simple advice, but it could be more powerful than you know. Having a written plan can actually separate people who stay the course from people who don't.
All right, so let's do a quick recap before we go, Amanda. You know, seven investment behaviors that could be hurting retirees: holding too much cash out of fear, timing the market instead of staying invested, ignoring tax efficiency and withdrawals, chasing yield without understanding the risk, failing to rebalance consistently, overreacting to short-term news, And finally, neglecting to adjust strategy as life changes. So thank you so much for everyone listening today.
Thank you for listening to Money Mastery with Amanda Mangum from Aspire Money Management. If you're ready to take the next step toward a stronger financial future, contact Amanda and her team today at 919-342-7715 or visit aspiremoneymanagement.net. Be sure to tune in next week for more financial strategies and insights right here on Money Mastery.